From Loretto to Camp Hill, Jersey Shore to Latrobe, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Pennsylvania is poised to become a world leader in the development of artificial intelligence technology. But what must be done to ensure the potential becomes reality? David Taylor, Rebecca Euler, and Stephen Bloom are here for a Capitol Watch discussion. And if Governor Josh Shapiro is sincere in wanting Pennsylvania to reach its full energy potential, he would immediately withdraw from the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. As we head toward Labor Day, the pace of political news surrounding the 2026 elections is heating up. State Senator Doug Mastriano continues to hint at potentially running again for governor while stopping short of announcing his intentions. Meanwhile, speculation swirls around State Treasurer Stacey Garrity, whom many consider to be the GOP's best shot at ousting incumbent Governor Josh Shapiro. In what will be another high-profile race, State Representative Tom Jones has announced his intentions to seek the state Senate seat in Lancaster County that Republicans lost earlier this year in a special election upset. The district will be up in regular cycle in 2026, giving Republicans a chance to reclaim the seat. Jones has a fiscally conservative voting record in the state House, making him a strong candidate in the heavily Republican district. Speaking of voting, a significant number of Pennsylvania residents are voting with their feet by moving out of the Commonwealth. From 2012 to 2022, Pennsylvania experienced a net outmigration of 181,662 residents. They took with them $16.5 billion in wealth and income. The report was issued by the Committee to Unleash Prosperity, which has an interactive map on its website showing each state's population gain or loss. California leads the nation in outmigration over the past decade. The Pennsylvania state budget? Well, it's now 1 month overdue, and there appears to be little urgency in getting a new spending plan in place. Governor Josh Shapiro is insisting on spending nearly $5 billion more than the Commonwealth is projected to take in, placing him at odds with Republicans who control the state Senate. Republican senators oppose the excessive spending, pointing out the state already has a structural budget deficit, which would be made worse if Shapiro's spend number were to be approved. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. With over $90 billion in investment in Pennsylvania's energy and artificial intelligence sectors having been pledged by some of the world's biggest players, steps need to be taken to provide the framework and resources for those promises to be fulfilled. Our Capitol Watch crew is here to talk about it. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation. David.
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, your Capitol Watch All-Stars from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, President and CEO, Rebecca Euler. Rebecca, great to be with you.
Great to be here, Dave. Thank you.
And my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, thanks for being here.
Thank you. Great to be here, David.
Well, we're still kind of chewing over the massive event that was held at Carnegie Mellon University, the brought together by U.S. Senator Dave McCormick, the Pennsylvania Energy and Innovation Summit. And that was the launch pad talking about $90 billion plus of Pennsylvania investment. And, you know, certainly it's cause for great excitement, but also Great concerns, not the right word, but there's an awful lot of stuff that we're going to have to get right, work that must be accomplished to be able to successfully bring about these promised opportunities.
And we're beginning to see that, David. We're seeing a lot of the municipalities all across the state taking whatever action they need to take to kind of clear the way for AI and that massive economic innovation. So they are doing what they can piecemeal, because Pennsylvania's got thousands of boroughs and
we're a commonwealth, not a state.
Right. So there's a lot of hoops to jump through, but there's a lot of action at the local level. And what we need to make sure is also happening simultaneously to make all this possible is that the state will address some of the regulatory issues on a grander scale across the whole state, because we've got issues that have prevented us from being competitive with even surrounding states, and certainly with some of the more forward-thinking, far-away states. We're just getting beaten by them in terms of regulatory efficiency. We're not saying there should not be good regulations and adequate safety and environmental constraints placed on the energy sector. But we are saying is they've got to have an even playing field with what's happening in other states, or else we're going to miss out on this one big opportunity that's now really emerged here, and Pennsylvania can take the lead if we do the right thing.
Yes, that's the critical point. Making sure that we have the rules we need, making sure that they are sensible based on sound science, and that the permitting process can proceed expeditiously so that projects are not unnecessarily delayed. And certainly we've seen other states, including states like Ohio, be proactive and forward thinking. And this is why they have pulled down a lot of investments that we were never even able to compete for.
I'm really excited about this $92 billion investment. And one of the things that people forget about is that we talk a lot about, you know, the energy, the engineers and software that comes about as a result of these AI and energy projects. But a lot of people forget that it really is the humble truck. It is men and women behind the wheels that actually deliver all the equipment.
Logistics.
The logistics, the construction materials, the steel, the turbines, the servers, all the things that actually make these new facilities and new projects operate. And actually, it's also, I will say that there's estimated to be a 1 to 2 indirect transport and logistics jobs for every direct construction worker that's going to be building one of these facilities. So it's important to remember the trucks in this. And I also like to talk about, we hear about physical AI. So when we're talking about developing AI, there actually is a physical component to that, where we're actually taking these applications of advanced computing and automation and putting them into real-world products. So I'm talking about machinery,
yes,
and vehicles,
yes,
next-generation robotics. And it's going to be the trucks that deliver the hardware, raw materials, and finished products for those products as well. So it's really exciting to see the environment that's going to grow up around these projects. And I want to make the point that trucking is going to be really important. And I think we forget that because we're focused on the technology.
Right. And so this opportunity is going to require a broad-based, multifaceted response by the entire productive sector to do the work necessary to make this come to pass. And so we need the Commonwealth to be moving at the speed of business and to be communicating with the stakeholders to understand what services, what activities the productive sector is going to need to be able to do their part of the work to help to bring this about. And, you know, Rebecca, one of the subjects that you bring up, and people might think it's mundane, but actually it's a small but critical part of keeping the system moving, which is to have enough parking spots for our trucks so our truckers can stay within the limits of their duty hours.
It is a critical problem, and one that is a problem across the nation, but it's especially a big problem in Pennsylvania. The Department of Transportation did a study about a year and a half ago, and it's sad to say that it's a year and a half ago because we haven't really accomplished anything since this data came out. But it found that there was a shortage of 4,400 truck parking spaces across the Commonwealth, and I'm sure the listeners, when you're driving down the road, especially at night, and you see trucks pulled along the on-ramps or off-ramps of a highway or parked along pull-off areas of the highway, those trucks are stopped there probably because they're out of their hours of service or they're at a mandatory break, and they must stop for safety reasons because we want to make sure they're well rested and they're able to drive safely. But there are not enough safe and secure truck parking spaces for them to stop. So we at a national level have been working to try and encourage states and the federal government to provide funding and opportunities to build truck parking spaces. So we have a shortage of about 4,400 spaces in Pennsylvania, and there's estimated to be about 1,100 trucks parked on shoulders and unauthorized areas across the state, which is 103% of the capacity of truck parking in Pennsylvania. So when you talk about things that are needed to keep the system moving, this is our basic transportation network and our economy that moves by truck. So all those goods and raw materials that have to move throughout our highways, this is holding them up. So this is literally an issue that is affecting not only the supply chain, but also safety on the roads, because those trucks are parked where they shouldn't be. And so we've been working to try to get that resolved. But Pennsylvania is really behind the curve here, because we have about 10.9 truck parking spaces for every 100 miles of highway, which is way below the average in the Northeast, which is 20 per 100 miles of highway. And because you mentioned Ohio, Dave, Ohio actually is doing very well with truck parking, 24.6 per 100 miles of highway. So while we're at 10.9, in Ohio, 24.6. In Ohio, just the other day, I saw announced a commitment by Governor DeWine there of 1,400 new truck parking spaces over the next couple of years at 33 different sites. Now, that is a real commitment to an issue which is causing the industry, the supply chain, a lot of problems, but it's going to solve a lot of issues. It's going to streamline things, and it's going to really affect their ability to respond to economic development opportunities. That's the kind of leadership we need here. And this is just an example, this truck parking issue, but it's one that we have the data, we know it's an issue, and we just got to move on it.
Yeah, and you see other states actually taking action to correct what is a correctable problem.
Yes, exactly. It's very frustrating, and it just kind of sitting around waiting for some action.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll get there at some point soon. But
well, but again, it brings us back to the perennial concept of opportunity cost. Like, the longer that Pennsylvania waits, the more we delay, the further we fall behind as other states advance. And even though we're the Keystone State, it's pretty difficult to deliver stuff without passing through Pennsylvania at some point.
Yes.
It's a weakness in the national logistics, the national transportation network. And so this hurts the national economy as a whole, but it's specifically our problem. And if we have if we had a governor who was tired of losing to Ohio and was really motivated about getting stuff done, you'd think that that person would spring into action and deliver the deliverables. And yet somehow that has not come to pass.
Yeah, just like you said, it is affecting the supply chain. An average truck driver spends almost an hour a day looking for parking. So imagine if that hour a day in Pennsylvania, for example, was a productive hour every day.
Mm-hmm.
That would be an amazing contribution to our supply chain and something that Pennsylvania could be proud of. We need to fix it.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation. Well, obviously, I was referring humorously to Pennsylvania's 48th governor, Josh Shapiro, who has been busy with I'm not sure what all, but it doesn't seem to be hammering out a state budget, because as we sit here recording, that the June 30 deadline is deep in the rearview mirror, and that the Commonwealth still does not have a general fund budget for 25-26.
Right. So the budget impasse for the state budget, Pennsylvania state budget, is now a full month. It's turning into an August issue, and it should have been done by the end of June. So that's what we're looking at on a macro level. We know that, as you mentioned, we know that our governor has been out and about quite a bit in the media doing things, but it seems like what he's been doing primarily has been talking about how cool it is to be out there, out and about, talking with people outside of Harrisburg, talking to a national audience on some of the late night TV shows, doing TikTok videos, all those kind of things, which is all well and good for a governor to be able to communicate, but they're not really communicating information and valuable.
And that's – yes.
So they're not – it's not a constructive conversation that will help our state get on the ball.
Correct. It's publicity. It's not really communicating right. anything of value, anything meaningful. It's not talking with people about Pennsylvania public policy or where the Commonwealth is heading, or even specific state agencies or state programs. It's just generally about how he himself, the governor, is so wonderful, how his political opponents are mean-spirited and just bad, and then also just sort of reciting his bullet points of the things that he claims to have succeeded thus far in his administration. So it seems like those would be things more properly done by a Shapiro campaign rather than by the taxpayers through the governor's office, but yet he persisted.
What I think the voters of Pennsylvania, the hardworking taxpayers of Pennsylvania need is a governor who's in the fray, who is, in the case of the situation we do have where the House is controlled by the Democrats and the Senate is controlled by the Republicans, it's naturally an at odds kind of a scenario for the governor to be able to come in good faith and urge the sides to come together and get a budget done, get mm-hmm. something on his desk that's a fair compromise that protects taxpayers, and in particular that does not raise spending to the levels that the governor recommended in his budget address earlier this year. That would put us deeper and deeper into a situation where the reserves, the state reserves and the state rainy day fund would have to be consumed because of the budget deficit.
Right.
So the spending level has to be dropped down. We can't have a $5 billion increase in our state deficit. That's going to cripple us going forward, and it's going to force a tax increase on Pennsylvania families in the coming years of thousands of dollars.
Spending, though, makes better bullet points, to Dave's point about him going down the Governor Shapiro liking to go down his bullet points and getting stuff done. Mm-hmm. Spending is a lot easier to talk about than financial responsibility, economic responsibility with the budget. So it's harder to put those into bullet points.
I'll be the scold. I'll be the bad guy here. I guess nobody else will do this. But we have a structural budget deficit. I know the listeners have heard me say this many times, but it's the fundamental point, or should be the fundamental point, of any state budget process, that we have a large and growing population of senior citizens who are beyond their working years, who they themselves require oftentimes taxpayer-funded services, but we do not have enough younger people in their working years to pay the taxes to sustain state government at its current scale. This demographic crisis is a result of the state public policy differential, where because Harrisburg year after year spends money faster than people can earn it, it stifles growth, and that it leads to the chronic economic underperformance that we have seen in the Commonwealth year after year, decade after decade. And we need Harrisburg to throttle back on spending, and we more than just throttle back, like we're at the point we need them to slam the brakes. That Jesse Topper, the House Republican leader, said, you know, even if we flat funded this year's budget, we'll still be in deficit within, I think, 2 years' time. And so the idea, so it's like imagine that you're heading towards a cliff in a car at 25 miles per hour, and that your the guy riding shotgun says we need to floor it, and we need to race at that cliff at 55 miles an hour, and so I'm not going to do that. I'll compromise that we'll just head towards the cliff at 35 miles an hour. That's not actually a solution. Mm-hmm. Under any of those circumstances, you're still going over the cliff. They need to slam on the brakes and change direction so that we are not so that Harrisburg is not spending money faster than people can earn it. That we need to get into a positive cycle, a virtuous cycle, where because of pro-growth measures, including controlling state spending, that the economy expands, it adds more jobs, people take up those jobs, they choose to build their careers and their families and their futures here in Pennsylvania. And then because of the organic growth in the economy from that the tax revenue going to the Commonwealth would be sufficient to pay for the promises that we've already made.
And when you look at Pennsylvania and you look in terms of demographics and all the people who have left Pennsylvania for better work opportunities and better investment opportunities in other states, again, it could be Ohio, it could be North Carolina, it could be Florida, but we're seeing these very strong trends and year after year now of families and individual workers leaving Pennsylvania. That starts to create those kind of labor shortages for us here that make it harder and harder also for companies who want to invest here to do so.
Yes.
They've got to be able to staff whatever they build. They've got to be able to operate whatever production facilities they create. And we're seeing those people take off for other states. And again, the governor's famously said that he gets tired of being beaten by friggin' Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meanwhile, he's not pushing the reforms that would be necessary for us to catch up with Ohio and then be ahead.
Correct. And that really is it. I returned just recently from the national meeting of the other state manufacturing associations, and that it makes that competitiveness differential really vivid for me when I'm talking with my friends from Arizona and Texas and North Carolina and those other high performing states, Indiana, and that I wish that our leaders in state government could look at the world that way, to say, you know, what are we doing that is better or worse than what our competitors are doing? How are our competitors performing? How are they doing with population growth, with GDP growth? And that, you know, again, once you take that view, you start seeing, oh my goodness, well, here, let's start the list. Unfortunately, Pennsylvania is painfully parochial, and that, that Pittsburghers and Scrantonians and Philadelphians just don't live in the same headspace together. And so it makes it more difficult to get a unified view that then looks beyond the limits of the Commonwealth. But anyway, so that's that for now. We're down to our last minute, and so I'll just go around the horn here. Steve, where can people find you and learn more about you and your organization?
They can visit commonwealthfoundation.org.
Excellent. And Rebecca, where can people learn more about the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association?
They can find us at pmta.org.
Excellent. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org. And from Steve and Rebecca and me, thanks so much for listening, and we will catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Not since the days of Andrew Carnegie has there been as much economic power in one Pittsburgh room as there will be at Carnegie Mellon University. Never has there been as much economic opportunity for southwestern Pennsylvania on a single day. That from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Shapiro's social media machine is fueled by a staff that has nearly doubled in size since his predecessor, Governor Tom Wolf, left office. Counting his communications, press, web, and social media staffers, 21 employees are dedicated to promoting Shapiro's image, touting his achievements, and communicating his views as governor. That from the Philadelphia Inquirer. In what could be described as a modern adaptation of the Charles Dickens phrase, "It was the best of times, it was the worst of times," these two recent news reports succinctly sum up the difference between U.S. Senator Dave McCormick and Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro. Even before he made his maiden speech on the floor of the U.S. Senate, McCormick pulled off one of the biggest economic coups in state, if not national, history. His Energy and Innovation Summit attracted the most influential movers and shakers of the tech and energy industries, four cabinet secretaries, and most notably, the President of the United States. The summit generated an eye-popping $92 billion, that's billion with a B, in pledged new investment in Pennsylvania's energy and technology sectors. It has brought economic opportunity not only to southwestern Pennsylvania, but to all corners of Penn's Woods. Just as weeks earlier, President Donald Trump demonstrated how to get stuff done by sealing a game-changing deal between U.S. Steel and Japan's Nippon Steel, McCormick eschewed rhetoric and instead produced results. That is the type of economic leadership that had been lacking in both our state and nation, but no longer. As a result, literally thousands, perhaps tens of thousands of new family-sustaining jobs will be created in the steel, tech, energy, and associated industries. Meanwhile, under the sort of green Capitol dome in Harrisburg, Governor Josh Shapiro has been doing what he does best, self-promotion. As the Inquirer reported, Shapiro has built a bloated staff whose sole mission is to burnish his image. Despite the outsized communications crew, the Shapiro administration has become one of the least transparent in state history. More information came from William Penn's quill than we are getting from Shapiro's tech team. As Megan Martin of the Commonwealth Foundation has pointed out, Shapiro has refused to make public his daily calendar, blocked efforts to reveal why his office spent $350,000 on law firms, and hidden details of his use of state transportation to travel to sporting events. He has also stonewalled providing information on his administration's handling of a sexual harassment scandal involving his former Secretary of Legislative Affairs. Emails relative to the situation have been wiped from state servers while Shapiro dodges accountability. Shapiro likes to say he gets stuff done. Aside from self-promotion, there is little evidence of getting stuff done. Witness the fact the state budget is now a month past due, with little apparent effort by the governor himself to move the process along. McCormick was gracious enough to include Governor Shapiro in his Energy and Innovation Summit. In his comments, Shapiro sounded all the right notes and, as always, eloquently appealed to both the tech giants and pro-growth audience. He pledged to be a partner in progress. But will his actions at long last match his words? Here is one way Shapiro can demonstrate his commitment to energy and technology development in Pennsylvania. Remove the state from the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or RGGI. RGGI is a multi-state compact which essentially would impose a carbon tax on energy producers. RGGI is the sword of Damocles hanging over the heads of energy development. State lawmakers have challenged the constitutionality of RGGI, correctly arguing that it is a tax and only the legislature has the power to enact a tax. The state Commonwealth Court agreed, but Shapiro has appealed the ruling to the state Supreme Court. Pending resolution of the issue, investment in energy infrastructure has virtually ceased. If Governor Shapiro truly wants to unleash the power of Pennsylvania's energy potential, he would withdraw his legal challenge and remove the state from the RGGI compact. Otherwise, he puts a roadblock on McCormick's road to economic prosperity, making it difficult for the private sector to get stuff done. But get stuff done they will. If past behavior is any predictor, when they do, Shapiro will point at himself and crow, like the rooster taking credit for the sunrise. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 30 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WBRX-FM in Crescent, WKFO-AM in Katanning, along with WMCE-FM in Erie, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.